Welcome to the New Books Network.
This is the Nordic Asia Podcast.
Welcome to the Nordic Asia Podcast, a collaboration sharing expertise on Asia across the Nordic region. My name is Kenneth Bo Nielsen. I am a social anthropologist based in Oslo and also one of the leaders of the Norwegian Network for Asian Studies. In this episode, we turn to India's challenges with waste management and to the infrastructures that are now increasingly being put in place to deal with these challenges. Any visitor to one of the bigger Indian cities will immediately notice that waste is an issue, and a serious issue at that. A recent estimate suggests that by 2025, that's just a year and a half from now, India will generate 1.3 billion metric tons of municipal solid waste every year. And with a recycling rate at below 20%, the negative consequences for both the environment and also for public health are clear and visible in both urban and rural settings. In policy discussions, the biggest problem with solid waste in India is usually seen to be the inadequate waste collection infrastructure and the general lack of efficient sorting and recycling systems. The solution is, in turn, usually deemed to be infrastructural. That if only India could get the infrastructure right, the problem of waste would be solved. So in this episode, we ask, what is India's experience with introducing new infrastructural solutions to tackle the problem of waste? And what are the social consequences of insisting on tackling waste through such technical and infrastructural mechanisms? To discuss these issues, we are joined by the interdisciplinary researcher Pamela Das, who was originally trained in sociology at St. Xavier's College in Calcutta, also with minors in political science and economics, and later further studies at the LSE, also in sociology. More recently, she has now become an anthropologist through studies at the University of Oslo, working on a project on the politics of waste management practices and infrastructures in northwestern India. Welcome to the podcast, Pamela.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So you chose to situate your own research on solid waste management in a place called Dharamshala, which is a small city by Indian standards and located high up in the mountains in the northwestern Himalayan state of Himachal Pradesh. Why did you choose this particular sort of relatively small location to study waste?
First of all, there is a very recognizable and a glaring gap in anthropological and ethnographic literature when it comes to urban infrastructures, in particular within these states in what we consider the Indian Himalayan region. There has been fantastic anthropological literature regarding other issues like cosmology, tourism, political and cultural ecology, but not so much on urban infrastructures. And that number dwindles to practically zero when it comes to waste infrastructures. So the only scholar that I'm personally aware of who has written consistently on waste management practices and waste infrastructures covering the Indian Himalayan region is Kaveri Gill. And that is just one person. So I thought that there was a need for an intervention within this sphere. So as I was doing the background research for my project and I was trying to locate as to where should I situate my project, I came across a slew of media articles talking about the rising waste crisis in the mountains, how the Indian Himalayas were drowning in waste. And because this area is also considered to be ecologically fragile, it is a very compelling narrative. And Dharamshala was featured quite prominently in these articles, and that struck me. Because I had visited Dharamshala before in 2017. And it's a rather dynamic city. It's a small scale city, but because it has this unique composition of Indian local communities, but also a significant Tibetan population due to the presence of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Tibetan refugees. It also draws large scores of international tourists, domestic tourists, seasonal workers, migrant workers, both domestic and international. So it's a city that's in flux constantly. And it's also a city that is urbanizing and expanding at an incredibly rapid pace. And because it draws so many tourist populations and workers and migrants from different parts of the world, the waste that is being generated is also quite significant. And because of this, I also noticed that there are all these different NGOs and civil society groups that have started working on waste management issues. And given all these factors, I thought it was the perfect place, honestly, to study anthropological issues on waste and waste management services. So, yeah.
What you call, or what also others call, the promise of infrastructure has in many ways been the point of departure for the project that you have done in Dharamshala. What do you mean by this? And what more specific promises do infrastructures hold in this particular context of Dharamshala?
Yes. So by promises, I simply mean the different visions of future that infrastructures can and often do conjure. Infrastructures, particularly large-scale physical infrastructures, they have a very strong affective charge. They make you feel things. And they have been so instrumental, especially in countries like India, when it comes to post-colonial nation-building projects. So we see this on a routine basis where state and non-state actors use infrastructures to make very bold claims about the future. And these are very political claims. So we see politicians, you know, especially during the election season, taking to the stage and promising to build a road, you know, to the local community. And by making the promise of building a road, they are not just promising enabling movement or mobility, but there is also the promise of economic growth. There is the promise of jobs. There is the promise of a sense of regional pride that the community is supposed to feel. And all these promises are embodied through infrastructures. So they are really technical objects as well, but they're also fantastical objects in that sense. And I see this being reflected in Dharamshala to a large extent, particularly given the fact that, as you mentioned, right, that Dharamshala is a small city by Indian standards. It is also a city located in the mountainous region, which has traditionally been considered to be somewhat falling behind, you know, when it comes to the big urban cities. So investing in infrastructure is quite important for Dharamshala to feel a sense of regional pride, because it wants to compete with the cities, the big urban cities of Delhi, Calcutta, Bangalore, Hyderabad. It is not content being looked at as just a small-scale city where people from these big cities come to enjoy, you know, a couple of days of summer vacation. So, for instance, in 2003, Dharamshala established an international cricket stadium. It is also has invested a significant amount of money in large-scale construction activities. There is a ropeway that is being constructed. You have different interventions in terms of waste management activities as well. So all of these different infrastructural investments signal a form of a certain way that the city wants to look. So there is that promise of aesthetics as well. And given the fact that it's also a tourist destination, aesthetics is quite significant. So wanting to be, for instance, a zero waste city becomes quite significant in with this regard. Because if tourists and if local community members see Dharamshala being, you know, completely rid of any visual signs of pollution and waste, then that would automatically pave the path for even more investments in other areas of the city, for example, in land and real estate and so on and so forth. So infrastructures are incredibly important for small-scale cities like Dharamshala.
You mentioned these very many different NGOs earlier that are somehow involved with waste management in Dharamshala. But I think it's fair to say that also beyond this context, there's been a very strong emphasis on the question of waste and how to manage waste in the past couple of years. There's the famous Swachh Bharat mission that's championed by Prime Minister Modi, widely regarded as the world's largest sanitation initiative. We have the Smart Cities mission, an urban renewal program that's also gained momentum in India with promises of finding new and so-called smart solutions to deal with the challenges of urbanization and also waste within that context. What's been sort of the influence of these bigger national programs in solid waste management in the particular local context where you have worked?
So Swachh Bharat Mission focuses exclusively on sanitation. Even though these programs have different areas of focus and emphasis, in practice, in Dharamshala at least, they feed off of each other and they are deeply entangled with each other. Swachh Bharat has provided really extensive, comprehensive, and very detailed guidelines with regards to waste management practices in Dharamshala. In fact, as one of my interlocutors mentioned, there is hardly a step that anyone can think of or any initiative that they can think of that has not already been covered by Swachh Bharat. That is how detailed it has been in its scope. And the part that particularly interested me and I think is quite significant about Swachh Bharat is that its area of focus seems to be behavioral change. That it's not as interested in creating particular physical infrastructures as it is interested in creating a certain kind of citizen. A citizen that is self-monitoring, that diligently separates their waste into different compartments, that does not litter, but also an individual that monitors the actions of others. So in Dharamshala, I noticed that when people would talk about Swachh Bharat, they would do it in terms of being an ideal citizen, being a responsible citizen, which, among other things, included monitoring one's own behavior towards waste practices. How diligently am I sorting my waste into different containers? It also involved monitoring the actions of other citizens. Are other people littering on the streets? Are they diligently sorting their waste into different containers? And also contributing voluntary labor, taking part in cleanups, helping out NGOs as a volunteer with their activities when it comes to waste management services. So this is the first area of focus that Swachh Bharat sort of deploys. And the second one, and this is quite important, is that it links practices of cleanliness, hygiene, waste practices, and reframes it as service to the nation and looks at it as patriotic duty. And in doing so, it infuses it with a completely different kind of value that I don't think we have seen before. And this is also where the inclusion of Mahatma Gandhi as the symbol of the Swachh Bharat mission becomes quite significant and acquires a different kind of prominence. Now, when it comes to Smart City, in my observation, has taken more of a lead in terms of creating physical infrastructures. And the focus seems to be on creating technologically advanced physical infrastructures. So in Dharamshala, the most obvious manifestation was the presence of something called smart bins. So these smart bins are waste bins with a dual compartment, one for disposing biodegradable waste, one for non-biodegradable waste. The smart, quote-unquote, aspect of the smart bins comes from the fact that there is a chip that is placed inside the bin. And as the waste bin gets completely full, the chip will send an indication to the local municipal corporation indicating that the bin needs to be emptied. Unfortunately, the smart bin has proven to be a massive failure. And by every account, there have been media articles that have declared it as a failure. Local community members have declared it as a failure. NGOs, and arguably even the municipal corporation, begrudgingly, they have to admit that it hasn't been much of a success. And the reason for it is that smart bins embody a technology that is not tailored to the needs of Dharamshala. Dharamshala has a unique landscape. It has one of the highest rainfall points in the country. It has an elevated landscape. It is very prone to natural disasters like land bursts and cloud bursts. And therefore, maintaining a dustbin like smart bin takes a lot of time, effort, and a certain kind of skill, which unfortunately Dharamshala at present does not have, and arguably it does not need. And these factors were not taken into account. Instead, again, coming back to the whole aesthetic promise of how the city should look like and how it can look like, that was prioritized over what the city actually perhaps needs right now. And ironically enough, even though smart bins were supposed to make the city more aesthetically pleasing, one of the first things you will see when you enter Dharamshala, Upper Dharamshala that is the sight of 3 to 4 smart bins completely covered in filth with, you know, cows and monkeys and horses feeding off from the waste. So that aesthetic promise has been completely overturned right now.
Yeah, these are some of the paradoxes of these kinds of infrastructural innovations and interventions in particular contexts. But I wanted to just bring us back to the question of the NGOs and the local NGOs, because I know that part of the research and the fieldwork that you did in connection with this project was to volunteer with an Indian NGO in Dharamshala, while also making some visits to a Tibetan NGO in the same context. And as we've understood up until now, I think, I mean, these NGOs, they play a significant role in solid waste management in Dharamshala. Could you tell us something about these activities and the kind of significance that these NGOs and their work can have for waste management practices and infrastructure?
Yes. So within the waste management sector in Dharamshala, you have two NGOs that are the major players, you could say, in the sector. One is the Indian NGO Waste Warriors. They primarily operate in Lower Dharamshala. And then you have the Tibetan NGO, CUDP, the Clean Upper Dharamshala Project, which, as the name suggests, they operate in Upper Dharamshala. And they are the environmental desk of the Central Tibetan Administration, which is the administrative body of the Tibetan government in exile. Now, both these NGOs, they are not just helping out the local, you know, municipal corporation here and there with the disposal of their duties. I would go so far as to say that they have established themselves as a parallel or a shadow system of municipal corporation when it comes to sanitation services and waste management services. They are not just, you know, merely raising awareness, conducting workshops, but they are actively engaged in creating, maintaining, repairing social and physical infrastructures when it comes to waste management. To give an example, in Lower Dharamshala, Waste Warriors, in somewhere around 2020, they established dustbins all across the city, which sounds like a rather simple act, but these small dustbins, they are very difficult, as I mentioned previously, with regards to smart bins as well, that dustbins are quite difficult to maintain in Dharamshala. They need to be cleaned out regularly, emptied regularly because of the huge tourist population. Again, because of the climatic conditions, there's a certain amount of time, effort, skill that needs to be devoted to maintaining dustbins. And it takes quite a bit of money as well. And given that the NGOs are funded by private donors, they don't have an indefinite amount of money at their disposal. So unfortunately, in 2022, when I was doing my fieldwork, they decided to retract some of these dustbins. And the local population, by that point of time, had developed a certain dependency on these dustbins. And so they were understandably not very happy with the decision of Waste Warriors to, you know, take the dustbins out. However, from the point of view of Waste Warriors, this was not their responsibility in the first place to place the dustbins. It was the responsibility of the municipal corporation. And this is also something that the solid waste management rules, which is the main body of legal set of rules that dictate waste management practices in urban centers across the country, they pinpoint to municipal corporations as the urban local body in charge for the provision of services when it comes to waste management. But here we had an NGO that was doing much of the job that the municipal corporation is actually supposed to be doing. And similarly, when you come to Upper Dharamshala, you have CUDP that has employed street sweepers to keep the areas surrounding the Dalai Lama temple clean. They have employed a truck, a vehicle of their own, to pick up waste from different parts of the region. And when I spoke to members of CUDP, they mentioned how when local residents in Upper Dharamshala, they face any difficulty with disposal of waste, they call them, not the municipal corporation, but CUDP. So that goes to show how significant a role these NGOs play when it comes to waste management, where the local community members tend to identify them more with waste management services rather than the municipal corporation.
You've also looked into the relationship between waste labor and waste infrastructures in Dharamshala. I mean, we have, of course, the formerly employed sanitation workers. But if we look sort of across India, there's millions and millions of persons often referred to as waste pickers, who, according to some estimates, collect around 80% of the total recyclable waste in India. How has this creation of all these new waste infrastructures affected these groups of people who have been engaged in waste work often for decades or for generations?
The first important thing to point out when it comes to waste work in India is that infrastructure is labor. And this is something I argue for in my project as well. And what I mean by that is much of waste work in India is done manually. So you have waste workers, you know, as you mentioned, sanitation workers who have been separating waste by their hands for decades. They are also the ones who are picking up waste from the sides of the streets. And within the waste sector, there is a dizzying number of arrangements, different working arrangements that people often tend to engage in. So there's a certain amount of flexibility. And when I use the word flexibility, I do not intend to romanticize it, but just to describe the specific rhythm of the work that takes place. So for instance, you have workers who are working as laborers in a scrapyard. You have workers who are working at a landfill. You have those who act as rag pickers and pick up waste from the side of the streets. And people often switch between these different types of arrangements, often within the same year, often within the course of their lives. Now, the introduction of new and physical infrastructures that are, say, technologically more advanced have led to a couple of different changes. So the first one is that there seems to be a discursive emphasis on technology that is downplaying the embodied effort and risk that is put forward by sanitation workers who have been engaged in this work for decades. So with the introduction of Smart City Mission and its promise of technological progress and development, the focus tends to be more on how technology is seen as a bit of a silver bullet that will fix the issues of waste management without necessarily looking at the human aspect of it, which constitutes majority of the work that is being done anyway. The second point is the question of access. So let me here again take the example of smart bins. Prior to the introduction of smart bins in Dharamshala, people used to dispose of their solid waste at designated points on the streets. And so the rag pickers had rather easy access to pick up, you know, valuable, recyclable items from these dumps, and they would sell it to the local scrapyard dealers. Now, once smart bins were placed in the city, they lost much of their access. They now had to work a little extra hard to find the same number of recyclable items. And therefore, this obviously impacted their livelihood. And as I spoke to a couple of rag pickers, they would often complain about how, because of these smart bins, no one was dumping their waste outside. And therefore, they had to sometimes reach inside the smart bins to collect something, which was, again, very difficult and quite challenging, and they would give up. The second and the final change that I observed was that the presence of technologically advanced infrastructures does not necessarily eliminate the need for human labor, right? What it calls for is rather a different kind of labor. And what I mean by that is, in Dharamshala, what I noticed was that there is an attempt right now to what we, you know, call in policy terms, formalize the workers and those who are working within temporary contracts or rag pickers. The attempt is to create a more professional environment for them to work in, specifically by the NGOs. So for instance, Waste Warriors, they have incorporated some rag pickers and certain sanitation workers who were working on temporary contracts with the municipal corporation, and they have provided them with 9 to 5 more permanent contracts, a salaried job, and identity cards, gloves, so on and so forth. The attempt is to create a more professional environment, a more bureaucratized environment, so that the workers work in a particular way. And again, it's also a question of aesthetics. When you have more technologically advanced waste processing facilities and, you know, technologically advanced instruments to work with, you need workers who embody that sense of aesthetics of what waste management in a smart city should look like. So this is an attempt to incorporate that sense of aesthetic by incorporating them within a more formalized and bureaucratized work environment.
One thing that fascinates me, in addition to the discussion of the role of labor and these new material infrastructures, is also these new market-based instruments and initiatives that are somehow gradually being introduced into the waste sector to transform waste into wealth, I believe, is the phrase that's often used. The Indian government has a new waste-to-wealth mission. One mission among many others by the current government, where the aim is, among different things. I mean, one is energy generation from waste. The other is to extract resources of value from the waste itself. And I think not just in India, but maybe even globally, we see these mechanisms or these market-based instruments being looked at increasingly as one important solution to these persistent challenges of waste management, both in India and elsewhere. How did these new practices and discourses manifest themselves in Dharamshala?
I would like to point out that waste-to-wealth perspective has always existed in India. There have always been people, for example, sanitation workers, housewives, domestic help, who have always seen waste as wealth. So just to give an example, when I was growing up, my own mother, she would put aside, you know, stacks of old newspapers and old utensils that we no longer used so that she could sell it to the local scrapyard dealer. So the major difference that I see right now is that this idea of waste to wealth has been institutionalized and has been financialized through the waste to wealth mission. So for example, in Dharamshala, one thing that was rather striking to me was the language that is now being used to talk about waste. There are words like profit and stock market that is being used to refer to the mechanisms of how waste is turned into wealth. And this is a very financialized language that is being incorporated that previously did not exist. And that has been a very significant impact of how people are orienting themselves towards waste and how people, you know, starting from a housewife to a small business owner to a scrapyard owner and even members of the NGO that I worked with, there's a particular way of looking at waste explicitly as a source of profit that has now come about because of Waste to Wealth mission. So there are programs like clean business programs that are being established by the local NGOs in Dharamshala to really channel this waste to wealth idea. The one that I found perhaps most interesting and relatively new was the speculative financial instrument called plastic credits that has emerged. And plastic credits operate on the same principle as carbon credits. It's an offsetting mechanism. So big companies that produce a certain amount of plastic commodities, they can purchase plastic credits. And by doing so, they signal that they have invested a certain amount of money in recycling, which quote unquote offsets their initial production of a certain amount of plastic products. The organization that I was working with, it was one of the very few organizations in the country that actually played a part in processing plastic credits and being a part of that recycling chain. So the emergence of these financial instruments signaled to a way of looking at waste in much more financialized terms, a way of thinking which signals that we are to increasingly look at market-based solutions for tackling the waste management crisis.
Pamela, thank you so much for coming to talk to us about India's challenges with waste and waste management, and for shedding light on not just the promise of infrastructure, but also on the real-life implications and often unforeseen consequences of implementing infrastructural solutions to the challenges of waste. Solutions that often generate, as we heard, new problems and issues of their own. My name is Kenneth Nielsen. Thank you for joining the Nordic Asia podcast, showcasing Nordic collaboration in studying Asia.
You have been listening to the Nordic Asia podcast.